This is Writing from Hand to Hand, a dialogue on Lewis Hyde's The Gift with Amy Hassinger and Fred Arroyo, recorded for Radio Free AWP 2011. Last spring, Fred and I exchanged a series of letters detailing our own personal responses to Lewis Hyde's book, The Gift. This past fall, Hyde published his latest book, Common as Air, Revolution, Art, and Ownership, which the New York Times called an erudite plea for protecting our cultural patrimony from appropriation by commercial interests. Given the appearance of Hyde's new book, Fred and I thought it would be a good time to revisit his first and to share with you the gifts it has offered us. What follows here, after a brief introduction, is a reading of selected portions of these letters. We hope our dialogue will open new lines of thought for those listeners to whom the gift has already spoken, and that it might encourage new readers to seek out Hyde's classic book and discover the many gifts that lie within it.
Gifts, given or received, stand witness to meaning beyond the known, and gift exchange is therefore a transcendent commerce, the economy of recreation, conversion, or renaissance. It brings us to worlds we have not seen before. Lewis Hyde, The Gift.
Why do we write? What is good writing for? Who is good writing for? Starting in 1977, Lewis Hyde, then an aspiring young poet, set out to answer these questions for himself. Hyde, the child of two scientists, had grown up in a household where the intellect was valued, but where science was the real thing. Science was the thing you did. Hyde studied under John Berryman at the University of Minnesota and published his first writings in the campus literary magazine, edited by Garrison Keillor, but did not hit upon the answer to these questions until he read an essay by the cultural anthropologist Marcel Mauss on gift exchange. Mauss's essay discussed the gift economies of Aboriginal societies, in which the society's leader expresses his or her power not by hoarding possessions, but by giving them away. Gift economies, as Mauss defines them, writes Daniel B. Smith in a 2008 New York Times Magazine article on Hyde, titled What is Art For?, are marked by circulation and connectivity. Goods have value only insofar as they are treated as gifts, and gifts can remain gifts only if they are continually given away. This results in a kind of engine of community cohesion, in which objects create social, psychological, emotional, and spiritual bonds as they pass from hand to hand.
When Hyde read Mauss's essay, he recognized a compelling metaphor for the creative process. He worked on The Gift for the next 7 years. Vintage Books published it in 1983. Almost immediately, it attracted a passionate audience of poets and writers, among them Robert Pinsky, Donald Hall, and Gary Snyder, who published a defense of the book after it received a nasty review in the New York Times. Their response was perhaps the first demonstration of the kind of adulation the book had inspired and the cult status it has achieved. Now, 29 years later, the book is a classic. Vintage Books printed a 25th anniversary edition in 2007. And writers and artists everywhere proclaim it as one of the most influential books in their libraries and their lives. David Foster Wallace said that no one can read The Gift and remain unchanged, and he called Hyde one of our true superstars of nonfiction. Margaret Atwood keeps several copies of the book around to hand off to anyone she thinks might benefit from its message. Canadian singer-songwriter Bruce Cockburn based his song The Gift in part on Hyde's book. Hyde's discussion of, in his words, the disconnect between the practice of art and common forms of earning a living is arguably even more apropos now than it was when it first came out.
Dear Fred, I've finished reading The Gift. So interesting and so wise. There's much to say about it, and I'm not sure where to start, but I'll begin here. My response to the book stems largely from my experience publishing my novels, an experience I was completely unprepared for and which really spun my head around. The focus of the publishing endeavor seemed to be almost entirely on sales, and while I understand the reason behind this, it's a business and the people involved want to make money, it affected me deeply. I found myself almost entirely distracted from the main goal of my work, which had been to make art, and seduced over to the commercial side of things, so that for a while, the main thing I wanted was to sell books. So I find Hyde's wise and articulate voice a refreshing counterpoint to that. My mouth dropped open when I read what Hyde had to say about usury and its evolution in Western society. Gift exchange, he says, unifies a group, keeping familial and tribal bonds intact. Usury comes then when, quote, spiritual, moral, and economic life begin to be separated from one another, probably at the time when foreign trade, exchange with strangers, begins. That's page 111. When a group begins to trade with strangers, then the spirit of the gift exchange transforms into something colder, something calculable and commercial. The spiritual increase that comes from exchanging gifts turns into a material increase based on interest. What happens then to a society that practices usury is that its members become almost necessarily alienated from one another. Natural or unnatural, he writes, in retail trade, men gain from one another and not from their union. Usury and trade have their own sort of growth, but they bring neither the personal transformations nor the social and spiritual cohesion of gift exchange. As the industrialized nations have shown us, a people may grow richer and richer in commodities while becoming more and more isolated from one another. That's page 113. I had never studied the Mosaic prohibition against usury before, nor given much thought to it as a way of keeping a tribe cohesive. But this seems to make so much sense to me, the way he's presented it, and demonstrates, too, so much that is troubling about our current society. And yet, it's also frustrating because what are we to do? We no longer live in a tribal world, nor should we, as far as I can see. There are serious problems with putting tribal or even national affiliation and loyalty over a more global, universal sense of fellowship. I don't think, of course, that Hyde is arguing that we reorganize our society according to tribal affiliation in order to support the artistic endeavor. Even he says that he came around to a different understanding about the value of commerce and of gift exchange after writing the book. Of course, we live within a given societal structure, and we have to make do as best we can within that structure. But what I appreciate about the book is that he has articulated something so clearly about art being, at root, a gift one gives to one's community, whether intimate or global, however far the work reaches, I suppose. I am glad to work within this conceptual framework. It soothes me, and it helps me make sense of my life.
Dear Amy, your thoughts spark several of my own, and help me with my reading of the gift. The gift Hyde describes does not create separation or alienation, but a transformative openness where poetry, prophecy, and religion are all one. Within a gift, we experience poetry, prophecy, and the spiritual. And that gift is within us, in the Conradian sense, because in this transformative openness, our being is bestowed or filled with a new awareness that we can see clearly and plainly beyond all that has been or would squelch our gifts. And this seems to me the space where I am astounded and overjoyed to discover in my writing, that space of living where I'm creative in ways I had not imagined possible. When I look back to my childhood, the life my parents had working and moving, the paucity of language, the linguistic and cultural confusion of English and Spanish, and how I never understood or could engage education until I was in my 20s, I realize now what a gift my writing is. Reading a book suddenly opens some deep well of images, feelings, words, and in that space, an afternoon suddenly became bigger than my life, and I dreamed greater possibilities I didn't know how to begin, let alone accomplish. Yet there was this stirring. I see now an awakening, and I started writing. It must have been a moment like Hyde describes. Sometimes, then, if we are awake, if the artist is really gifted, the work will induce a moment of grace, a communion, a period during which we, too, know the hidden coherence of our being and feel the fullness of our lives. I know no one can take that grace away from me. There is a communion and fullness I receive from the gifted words of others, and I can continue to increase the power of those words and perhaps share that same feeling of coherence, aliveness, and possibility in others. In a way, it's a very basic idea, and yet I feel this need to recognize once again all the parts of life that ignore this gift, that try to hide or destroy it, and to awaken myself once again to the power writing can have to make life creative, substantial, and alive. Perhaps I've begun here with a story, and my hope is for this story to share how the gift has been speaking to me, has become a part of my life, and how it's helping me to imagine possibilities for its power in the future. I found the book to be a very rich work, very detailed, and the final chapters profound. I realize it's very important to recognize the political and economic structures we live within, and given my background, I should not be one to avoid them. But something has happened over the last 10 years that continues to push me away from the political and the economic, even though I know that it is impossible. And all I mean is that I am much more interested in what is most necessary to live a good life. What would be the actual things I need around me? What kinds of daily practices and activities would I need to engage in relation to a geography and the seasons? And what would I begin to discover, learn, and invent from that place? And I don't mean some unattainable goal of becoming a hermit or an ascetic, just more of a life where I can recognize the gifts I am offered, the place where the gift resides in me, and then the fruition of the work I do. Isn't that a very important element we have to fight for? We have to constantly demand of ourselves and our worlds. Maybe that's what I appreciated most in the book, those moments where I felt an insight into the creative process, into old and new ways of thinking about how, through our writing, we are standing on the shore of a very ancient sea of purpose, wisdom, and life. And on this shore, we yearn for the salmon to return. We yearn and wait, all the while throwing bones, words, lined out sentences, crossed out and rearranged paragraphs, crumpled or torn pages back into the sea with the belief that we are helping those salmon to come back home. There is so much more I'd like to write. I'll just end this note for now, though, and say that one of my favorite parts of the book was found on pages 144 through 152. I think there are some extraordinary passages in these pages, passages I will read over several times, and a brief essay to share with others. I think what strikes me is Hyde's question, to whom does the artist address the work? And then instead of answering the question directly, Hyde describes three different versions, myths, of where the poet discovers his gift. In some angel, genius, or demonic spirit, Whitman. In a conversation with history, culture, and the creation of a living tradition, Pound and Yeats. And something human, current, and almost anonymous. Perhaps, I think, what we call in Spanish, canto hondo, the deep song of the earth or people, Neruda. I am a strong believer of the latter. I give myself almost wholly to that canto hondo. At the same time, however, I realize that even though Hyde seems to present these three myths of the poet's gift as separate, as exclusive from each other, they are for sure related. They overlap, and they create a gift exchange between each other. For our creativity and writing, we want to keep close to us as many of these kinds of myths as we can, so they nourish, support, and energize our gifts.
Dear Fred, finally, I'm finished with student packets for the moment and with other odds and ends, and can approach your wonderful letter. It's especially apropos in my mind that Hyde uses the word awake, and that you echoed him, quote, to awaken myself once again to the power writing can have to make life creative, substantial, and alive. I've been doing some reading on Buddhism, and this seems to me to be one of the central tenets of Buddhism, a call for us to awaken to the life that unfolds before us every moment. Writing, being a writer, calls us in a similar way, asks us to be awake to experience, and, by communicating our own wakeful observation, to call others to do the same. I guess I have an incorrigible religious impulse. I come from believing Christian families on both sides, and so I tend to respond to things that are meaningful to me in a way that invites religious language, albeit non-denominational religious language. So I do see writing as a vocation, a calling, much as a priest or nun might speak about having a religious vocation. And this also is another way of setting writing apart as a practice or a discipline rather than a job or occupation. It divorces it on another level from the world of commerce. People tend to balk at the word religion these days, It's so caught up with fundamentalism and right-wing political craziness, as well as moralistic thinking. But I like to think of the word as stemming out of its etymology, religio in the Latin, which comes from religare, to reconnect or bind again. It's interesting to me, then, to be reminded of this passage from Hyde after reading your letter. Out of what the soul has offered him, the poet makes the work. And in this interior commerce, the finished work is a return gift, carried back into the soul. In a famous letter, Keats wrote that the world is not so much a veil of tears as a veil of soul-making. The artist makes a soul, makes it real, in the commerce of gifts. The point of the commerce is a spiritual increase and the eventual actualization of the soul. That's page 191. I love this idea that the soul that produces the art also feeds on it, that the labor, the craft, that second gift, is a kind of kiln through which the gifts of the soul pass and are rarefied and transformed, only to be given back, consumed again by that same soul from which they originated, and also by the greater world who receives them. A veil of soul-making. What a fabulous idea. It does seem to me to capture something about the truth of existence, the purpose of being alive, if we can speak of life as having a purpose. And yet we've grown away from the idea of a soul in this scientific era. We tend to believe more fervently in biochemical amalgamations, in purely physical manifestations of matter, which die away when the matter dies. What is it we make, then, when we make souls? I don't know the answer to that, but I do feel that the cycle Hyde talks about, the first gift, experience, moving through the kiln of the second gift, labor, craft, to create the third gift, the finished work, is something of essential, basic value, something that touches to the root of our being. Maybe it's more accurate to think of it as a spiral rather than a cycle, or really as both. There is the interior commerce, the return gift to the soul that made it, and the exterior one, the gift offered to the world. So the gift cycles back to its source, while simultaneously spiraling out, away, to other souls, other sources, who will then receive it as a gift, as experience from which to forge their own souls. I am drawn to this idea that, quote, alone in the workshop, it is the soul itself the artist labors to delight. I have heard this before and said it myself, in different words, to my students, that we write first for ourselves, that our primary goal should be to write the kinds of books that we ourselves would want to read. And the fact that by laboring to please ourselves, we are simultaneously enriching the world, speaks once more of the interconnectedness of souls, if you are inclined to think that way, or of all matter, even. It is doing an essentially religious work. It is reconnecting, rebinding experience with meaning, linking the chaos of constant sensory inputs with the serene understanding of the soul. How strange that it should be such a battle. As I've said to you before, I often worry that by spending my time writing, I am being self-indulgent. I am not giving back to my community, etc., etc. But reading Hyde with you helps ground me, helps to quiet that naysaying voice within me, helps me to remember what I believe, that the gift exchange of art is the essence of what living is, the world of commerce being only a secondary byproduct of living, a kind of necessary evil, though evil is too strong a word. And yet our day-to-day world functions almost as if this gift exchange were non-existent, or at least unimportant, as if the priorities were reversed. When the soul-making gift exchange of art falls into this secondary realm, it deliquesces into pure entertainment, and the power behind its purpose is lost. This is the lie you talk about, Fred, the lie of Western consumer society. This letter is continued in Writing from Hand to Hand, Part 2. Where you lay, you're